For the series A Book, A Thousand Stories, this is a review of John Suchet's The Last Waltz. Each episode is enriched by beautiful music selected by Gerald Fennec. The script is mine, Patricia Salomone. At this stage of the book, The Last Waltz, our author, John Suchet, spices up the reading with an account of Johann Strauss's junior's love life. We are told that 3 years after his first debut in Pavlovsk, Strauss, by then in his mid-30s, fell hopelessly in love with a young Russian aristocrat, Olga Smirnitsky. Olga was 21 years of age, Strauss 13 years her senior. She was musically gifted and the daughter of aristocratic Russian parents. Intelligent, well-read, able to converse in French, she was flighty, unpredictable, and impish. Johann declared that he could not live without her. He was convinced, he said, that you are the being destined by God for me. She was flattered to be courted by the most famous musician in Europe, but she played with his feelings, and he truly believed that he would be accepted by her aristocratic family. So great was his disappointment when, having been summoned to the sumptuous Smirnitsky Palace, he was told to keep away from Olga, as her parents disapproved of the relationship. The family was aristocratic, moving in the highest circles, wealthy and landed, and a match with a mere musician simply was not on the cards. In the spring of 1860, a letter arrived in Vienna for Strauss. It was from Olga. "Do not condemn me," she wrote, "when you read these lines. I will be brief and not embark on a long explanation. I have been engaged for 2 weeks. Forget your unfaithful imp." And forget he did quite easily, as he became attracted to another much more experienced woman, a mezzo-soprano who he had previously met in theatre circles. Her name was Henriette Schapuletsky. She was known by her stage name, Jetty Treffitz. By the age of 21, Jetty had become the mistress of the Jewish banker Moritz Todesco, owner of one of the newly built palaces in the Ringstrasse in Vienna. Those of my listeners who followed my first series of A Book, A Thousand Stories, A Hare with Amber Eyes, may remember that the Todesco family were neighbors of the Effrussi, who also had built their palais on the newly opened Ringstrasse at the height of the 19th century. Henriette was the mother of 8 illegitimate children. For 18 years, she was Todesco's mistress. He had fathered 2 of her brood. Her friendship with Strauss became a love affair, and when he proposed marriage, Todesco consented to release her and to even keep custody of their 2 daughters so that they could take up his aristocratic title. On 27th August 1862, in St. Stephen Cathedral, Kapellmeister und Musikdirektor Johann Strauss married Henriette Schapulecki of single status. Johann Strauss was 38. She was 7 years his senior. Against all expectations, this was to be a successful marriage. Suchet writes, Johann Strauss could not have chosen a more suitable wife. Having now reached chapter 11 in the book, The Last Waltz, I can say that our author gives us an overview of what was happening in the capital of the Habsburg Empire, opening the narrative with a reference to the marriage of the young new emperor, Franz Josef, and his strikingly beautiful wife, Elizabeth of Bavaria, who has gone down to history by her nickname, Sissy. The marriage was celebrated on 24th April 1854. This is a marriage that would be, in Suchet's words, damaged by misunderstandings, divergent interests, absences and separation, and wounded beyond repair by suicide and murder. The now famous portrait by Franz Xaver Winterhaller, showing Sissy posing in a fairy-like tulle dress and displaying her luxurious hair adorned by a string of star-like jewels, deservedly takes up a whole page in this chapter. told of the great expansion that Vienna went through in the mid-19th century, when its population increased by 30%, and the emperor, well aware that he was upsetting the traditionalists, ordered the demolition of the Bastille, which had been built in the 16th century, to defend the city from the onslaught of Islam. Experts demolished the mighty walls, which came to be replaced by the grandiose Ringstrasse, which comprised a central section for carriages, later on for vehicles, and was flanked by lanes of trees and pathways for promenaders. Along this majestic avenue were built the city's most imposing buildings: the Opera House, the Parliament Building, the City Hall, the Stock Exchange, the Imperial Theatre, and, I may add, such grand homes as those of the Tedescos and Uffizi, amongst others. Beginning of the second half of the 19th century, the Viennese were celebrating their liberty, their new ruler, a newly thriving economy. They had every reason to eat, drink, dance to the music of their acclaimed composer, Johann Strauss. The demand, we are told, was so huge, Strauss could not keep up with it. He decided to elevate also his younger brother, Edouard, to the podium. There were now three Strauss brothers conducting three Strauss orchestras. While in Pavlovsk in 1862, Johann Strauss fell ill and called Edouard to come over from Vienna and take over the conduction of his orchestra in Russia. Was it really exhaustion? Or was there an ulterior motive, more personal reason? Within 3 weeks of leaving Pavlovsk, Johann had married Jetty Trefts. Jetty proved to be a supportive wife, lover, artistic advisor, private secretary, and even nurse. When she accompanied her husband and brother-in-law Joseph to Pavlovsk, Joseph was to write, "Jetty is indispensable. She writes up all the accounts, copies out orchestral parts, sees to everything in the kitchen, and looks after everything with an efficiency and kindness that is admirable." Today, I say, we would call her a bionic woman. On Jetty's suggestion, the now wealthy Johann bought a house in Vienna's stylish suburb, Heitzing, opposite the botanical garden of the Schönbrunn, with views of the Vienna woods and the spire of St. Stephen's Cathedral. The composer's artistic vein was at its zenith. During this happy period, he composed the waltz Morkenblatter, The Tales of the Vienna Woods, and Wine, Women, and Song. Johann's fame spread across Europe. In fact, in the summer of 1867, Johann Strauss received an invitation to perform in Paris during the World Exhibition.
World exhibitions were very much a product of the 19th century. The first such exhibition was that organized by Queen Victoria's Prince Consort, Albert. It was held in 1851 and was a personal triumph for the Prince and one of great prestige for the British Empire. For powers and expansion, such exhibitions also served as a propaganda exercise, advertising the might of the exhibiting power. France, no less. France, the eternal rival of Great Britain. Yet France, under Napoleon III, saw a very close friendship between the British royal family and that of Napoleon III. The first Exhibition Universelle held in Paris dates to 1855. Napoleon III was riding high on the international diplomatic scene, even as France was deeply involved in the Crimean War as an ally of Great Britain, Sardinia, and the Ottoman Empire against Russia. The Peace of Paris ended the war in 1856 with a vanquished Russia's expansionist aims at the Ottomans' expense thwarted and held at bay for the time being. In the following years, things were not always rosy for the French. The Austrians were annoyed with Napoleon III's involvement with Italian aspirations for unity. Most Italians were in turn disappointed with Napoleon III's backing out in 1859. Russia smoldered and snarled in the background, but the French emperor moved on, and as early as 1864 was planning an exhibition to showcase all the progress France had made in many fields, such as industry, trade and commerce. It was also timed to coincide, when ready to open its doors, with the completion of the great renewed urban planning project under the so-called Baron Haussmann, or Haussmann as the original surname is written. The emperor appointed his first cousin, Prince Jerome Napoleon, as president of the commission to see to the preliminary work. The site chosen was the Champ de Mars, the city's great military parade ground, to which was added the so-called Île de Billancourt. These covered a total of 171 acres, or 69 hectares. The exhibition's main display area was a rectangular building 490 meters long by 380 meters. A pavilion in the center was surmounted by a dome and surrounded by a garden of 166 by 56 meters. A gallery was built completely around it, while apart from the main building, there were almost 100 smaller buildings in the grounds. More than 40 nations took part, and a total of 50,336 exhibitors were registered, of whom just over 15,000 were from France and her colonies, and a little over 6,000 from Great Britain and Ireland, as well as some 700 from the USA. Almost $6 million had been spent on the exhibition, and returns were $2.8 million, but this deficit was made up by grants from the government as well as the city of Paris. Interesting to note is how a display of objets d'art from Japan at this exhibition started off a craze for anything Japanese, which spread all over Europe. Van Gogh was among them, and a group of French artists developed a style called Japonisme. The exhibition opened on the 1st of April and closed on the 31st of October 1867. It was visited by more than 9.2 million persons. The exhibition was Napoleon III's and his Second Empire's swan song. Just 3 years later, France suffered a great humiliating defeat during the Franco-Prussian War, sweeping away the Second Empire and Napoleon III into exile.
With the recommendation of Le Figaro, day after day, Strauss was in such demand that he had to find new material, and fast. This saw the birth of the much-loved by the beautiful Blue Danube. It was perfect for the French public that relished a slower form of Walzer. Johann Strauss Jr. was at the pinnacle of his fame. Things could not get better. But, says our author, they could get worse. As I said in the first episode of this series, it is incredible how this family of musicians who composed such delightful, happy music was plagued with illness, trouble, and tragedy. Johann always declared that though he was the more popular, it was his brother Joseph who composed the best music. In fact, though reluctant at first, as he was keen to pursue his engineering career, Joseph was a highly gifted musician. He wrote hundreds of music scores, amongst them one entitled, "My Life is One of Love and Joy." Susha says the title could not have been more inappropriate. Joseph suffered from frequent headaches and was a heavy smoker. This led to frequent fainting fits, exacerbated by the rivalry between the three brothers. Yet, notwithstanding their rivalry, this is the time the two brothers, Johann and Joseph, in Pavlovsk, wrote their most famous and loved polka, the Pizzicato Polka. But the rivalry caused much anguish to their mother, who had strived so hard to create the family music enterprise. She wrote, "May God one day forgive you. I have not deserved this ingratitude." On 23rd February 1870, Anna died from suppuration of the lungs. Her sons were devastated, and we learn that Johann developed an almost irrational fear of sickness and death, so much so that he refused to attend his mother's funeral. All arrangements fell to Joseph, himself sickly and extremely tired. A couple of months later, Joseph was due to take up an engagement in Warsaw for which he had signed up in an effort to become independent from his elder brother. He left for Warsaw, tired, almost to the point of exhaustion. Disaster awaited. I will not go into the detail of the many delays caused by customs authorities and the fact that some of the orchestra musicians failed to arrive. Joseph was desperate, and when finally he took to the podium, in a particularly tricky, passage, strings and wind began to pull apart. Joseph tried to control the orchestra. He suddenly staggered and fell off the podium, cracking his head. He was carried back to his apartments, bleeding from his nose and ears. His wife Caroline joined him from Vienna, as did Johann and Jetty. But Johann too was unwell, so doctors in Warsaw were attending to both brothers. Johann recovered, but the younger brother was in a critical condition. Joseph died at the age of 42 in July 1870, and he was buried along his mother in St. Mark's Cemetery outside Vienna. Within a short span of time, in the year 1870, the Strauss family mourned the death of two members. But the show must go on, and we shall see how the show went on in the next program of the series A Book, A Thousand Stories, The Last Waltz. Till next week, I wish my listeners goodbye, and I thank Gerald Fenwick for the musical element in the program, Albert Storace for his history notes, and the technicians at Campus FM.